Informative, interesting, intelligent. President and CEO with the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber, Amber Smith with News from the Chamber.
Hello, and welcome to the March edition of News from the Chamber on Business Radio X. I'm Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, and we are broadcasting right here in Tucson at Stuart Title on Broadway. With me, as always, is my Vice President, Michael Guyman, who will help navigate an important industry to not only our region, but to the country. Hopefully, we will avoid potholes along the way.
Like the one I hit this morning.
Well, what we want to talk about is logistics. Southern Arizona is a transportation and distribution hub that conveniently connects people and products in today's competitive global marketplace. Our region's unique geography near the Mexico border and near our deepwater ports, as well as the strong transportation infrastructure we do have, means excellent access for trade. So, little known fact, we have over 150 transportation and logistics providers in Tucson, and they serve over 34 million people within a 500-mile radius. And over 55 million within a 1,000-mile radius. Michael, did you realize that this was such a huge industry?
I had an idea because we have some great companies here. We're going to talk about the Port of Tucson, but we have Chamberlain, we have Target.com Fulfillment, we have Home Goods Distribution, which just landed here about 4 years ago.
Amazon,
so, Amazon just announced. So. Not just one center, but two centers, one at the Port of Tucson and one on the west side of town. So, yeah, I had an idea, but the numbers are certainly still staggering.
So with us this morning, we have Mike Levine. Mike is the owner of the Port of Tucson and oversees the management of over 2 million square feet of warehousing, distribution, manufacturing, and rail-served properties. And as Michael just mentioned, is also home to a new Amazon distribution center. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Amber.
And joining us as well is Emily Klein. She's the owner of C&W Consulting, specializing in QuickBooks products, payroll, and payments. More importantly, she is also the acting president of the Southern Arizona Logistics Education Organization, which we will affectionately call SALEO. SALEO's mission is to educate, promote, and grow the transportation and logistics industry by networking the logistics service providers and users in the Arizona-Mexico region. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Amber.
So, very complicated topic, and yet I'm guessing that all of us in this room have had to stop at a train once or twice, so there's actually some pretty firm basics there. You know, Mike, speaking of trains, talk to us about Port of Tucson.
So the Port of Tucson is, we have 700 acres on the southeast side of Tucson. We're a family-run business. It's my dad and brother and I. My brother and I really run all the day-to-day operations. And we essentially have, what we've established as an inland port for Southern Arizona and really the Tucson region, where we have 10 miles of our own track, our own locomotives, equipment for doing loading and unloading of any type of rail type of traffic, whether it be intermodal containers, boxcars, hopper cars. And we've tried to really be that connector in Southern Arizona for anything where when you have a need for going from rail to truck or truck to rail, when it comes to logistics, warehousing, manufacturing.
So let's broaden that a little bit. Emily, so what is exactly the transportation and logistics industry? Because we do know that it's more than just, you know, the trucks and rail.
Exactly. It's not just the physical components of what you mentioned. You said, you know, sitting at a train.
Train.
sounds pretty simple, but it's basically a complex network of modalities, facilities, big data, data points, and then people that bring it all together. And it's all about moving goods and services to the consumer at the end of the day. So point A to point B can sometimes mean that A is raw goods coming out of a mine. Logistics is in charge of making sure it gets to that manufacturer, turns into something, ends up at an Amazon warehouse, so they order it, there's tons of data and inventory being tracked, and then boom, you've got whatever you asked for in the beginning.
So if something goes wrong with any of those components, I would assume that would have a domino effect on our economy.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, trade is a huge component, the border, the mines, we mentioned that. Basically, a lot of complexities, a lot of moving parts is what logistics is all about. And, you know, that goes into the skill set that's needed. It's a sense of urgency kind of industry.
Why is Southern Arizona, what assets do we have that has really contributed to us becoming a leading logistics hub?
You mentioned our geography earlier, our access to Mexico, the I-10 corridor that runs from LA to El Paso is heavily traveled by local logistics companies in Tucson and trucking companies. We have an outstanding airport here that has a lot of potential for international traffic. It's a healthy airport, so they're making some investments in runways and things. The Port of Tucson sitting next to me, an inland port, the fact that that exists in the city adds a lot of accessibility to different modalities, basically. You know, you can look at shipping containers in Tucson, even though we don't have a water port here.
So, Mike, so Port of Tucson is home to many companies, taking advantage of the 2 million square feet that you have. What are those companies, and why would you say that they've chosen to locate at the inland port?
For the 2 million square feet that we have there, we have a pretty broad array of companies, all in the logistics sector. Probably one of the bigger ones that is along the lines of what Chamberlain does here in town is NTD Southwest. They, I believe, have chose Tucson region, and specifically the Port of Tucson, I believe, because of that location. They follow a model like Chamberlain does, where they bring in components, any of the parts needed to build their end product, warehouse them here, send them down into Sonora for assembly, packaged, come back, you know, to be palletized, and then brought back here to the U.S. side for domestic and sometimes even international distribution. A number of different companies that follow that same model. There's Avent, which used to be a division of Kimberly-Clark. We have a plastics injection molding company, and a lot of those are focused here because of our connection with Mexico and the fact that we can leverage the strengths of both having a U.S. presence as well as a Sonora, Mexico presence.
So then, with the international distribution, have you constructed facilities to specifically market to trying to get goods into Mexico?
Most recently, I guess the short answer is yes. The longer answer is that as part of the buildings that we've put up over the last, I guess, 19 years, 20 years, we have a number of them that have just regular docks to them where they can be served by intermodal containers. You don't need rail to the building. You can actually just back a truck or one of these intermodal containers that's on a chassis up to your building and utilize that rail traffic. But more, I guess, as a better example, is we have two buildings, one that we've had for a number of years here and then one that's coming online where it has dock-level access to the back of it, so it facilitates access to primarily boxcars, hopper cars, other type of rail transportation where you need access right to that car. We've had a long-term tenant out there that actually imports beer from Mexico. So that's a great example of where that tie-in between Mexico and Southern Arizona comes into play with these facilities they're able to transfer their goods up here by rail, unload it, and do a transload and warehousing into truck, and then do distribution here locally.
So sticking on with this Mexico theme, and this, either of you could answer this question, but there's a lot of building in Nogales right now, quite a bit of warehouse building that is trying to service, you know, certain sectors. Is there... You know, we obviously have quite a bit here in Tucson. You know, Port of Tucson is something that obviously Nogales doesn't have, that kind of facility. But do we, because since they are the port city, what kind of relationship do we have with them? I mean, do we do things in partnership with them, or are we just kind of doing our own thing from a logistics standpoint?
I can speak to that. Celeo is, we hold a big golf tournament once a year for a lot of transportation companies that aren't only transportation companies here in Tucson, but they extend into Mexico. So they actually are being held, you know, as companies in Mexico. And they all come together as a networking opportunity to raise funds for people studying in logistics. And that doesn't limit itself to just, you know, your average school attendee here at Community College or whatnot, but it can roll over also into professional training that companies like Apex are doing overseas in Nogales, Mexico. They are physically, you know, the individuals, the management is coming to the U.S. in Nogales, U.S., to train for Apex, you know, further educating their logistics knowledge and then going back into the Mexico environment because they know directly that they need to understand our business practices in order for us to all work together. So we really strive to bring them together, whether it's through networking, like I mentioned, through education, just through strong knowledge share. There's a lot of brokers that work on either side of the border every day. And so all of that starts to develop the relationships and the understanding of what we need to do moving forward to continue to keep that trade alive.
I'm curious on the pieces of training talent for logistics. What are those types of jobs and what skill set is sought after by those working for those type of companies?
Sure. you know, let me just start by saying you mentioned 150 companies earlier that are logistics companies, kind of transportation companies, but you also have to consider all of the other companies in the world, really, that have a logistics component to them. And one of the biggest organizations I can think of off the top of my head is the military. So here in Tucson, of course, we have Davis-Monthan and a ton of talent that end up retiring right out of that particular base. And there's a lot of skill sets that have been homegrown in the logistics military service that can be applied to other jobs outside of the military. So, you know, as far as where can people get training, they're sometimes getting training right where they already are. And that's important to understand in the logistics industry, I think, for both the employees and the employers. Now, specifically, Pima Community College does offer an associate's degree program that is called Supply Chain Management and Logistics. And they have certification as well like I said, an associate's degree. NAU has a business college degree that really focuses on logistics, and that is offered at the Tucson location here as well as online. Pima articulated this program recently. They had, I think, 12 students 3 years ago in the program, and they're up to over 100 students today. U of A has a strong graduate program, MBA program, that ties in, as well as production programs. So there's a lot of different kind of traditional places you can find the education and non-traditional that, you know, companies are offering their employees to really continue to raise up the skill sets.
So Mike, I guess then extending that question to you, are the companies that are calling the port home, how are they experiencing an ease of finding qualified employees, or is it still somewhat of a struggle?
I think from the people I talk to, whether it be in logistics or a lot of the sectors, everyone I speak to, one of the things that's on the top of their list is finding qualified and qualified workforce. I think that right now, you know, logistics is impacted by that same thing. One of the things, and you had mentioned earlier, we were very fortunate to be able to close a deal to bring an Amazon fulfillment center here to town. And one of the best things that did for the Tucson region, as far as from a logistics standpoint, is the 1,500 to 2,000 jobs that they're bringing into town. There was a need for more logistics workers and logistics professionals than what was in the region. And so we knew of a couple of different places out of state, New Mexico, California, where we had heard of job fairs going on for Amazon, attracting workers into the region. And so my feeling is that is the more that come into town, the more you get that cluster, the more you get that opportunity where someone else, like the Home Goods, like the Amazon, like a Target.com, want to locate a DC or a distribution center or a fulfillment center, they'll know that with a certain critical mass of logistics jobs in that region already, there's going to be a certain amount of fluctuation there where they can access that labor pool.
So one of the hats that Mike here wears is he served on the Tucson Metro Chamber Board. And I love how this conversation has evolved in a direction that I wasn't expecting with Emily talking about the talent coming out of our military. Because the chamber has been championing and leading in doing hiring events. We did one specific for the military for veterans entering into or with the idea that they could enter into jobs in aerospace and defense because their skill set aligned so well with that. And the logistics stories that I've heard in the past is a huge corporation, Coca-Cola, was having difficulty hiring some folks in logistics. And once they realized the military base was within 100 miles of them, there's some phenomenal stories of how they were hired. So I'm excited that the chamber were able to take advantage and really, I would say that we're doing its best in understanding the depth of that type of talent coming out of our military, because we do have 6 installations just in Southern Arizona, including our friends in Sierra Vista and Yuma. So along those lines, we've talked about the talent, but what about technology? You know, how has that evolved with the logistics industry?
Well, let me take one step back before mm-hmm. we move into that. You know, we didn't really cover necessarily job titles that we're looking at, mm-hmm. you know, so that people out there that are maybe thinking, oh, I might pursue logistics. What kind of title
right.
does that look like? And there are entry level positions in customer service, for example, and that is actually one of the highest demand positions in the logistics industry. And you brought up Amazon. I guarantee Amazon is going to need, they might not call them customer service representatives, but they're going to probably need at least 100 of them to run their facility. So, you know, that's where you think about maybe a customer service person in a call center or that had a service-oriented, you know, stores position in the military can transfer those skill sets into the logistics industry. But beyond CSRs, production workers, shipping, receiving, forklift drivers, there's also operations managers, warehouse managers, data engineers, production and planning engineers, data analysis. So all of those kind of last couple of titles that I mentioned that are in need and in higher demand every day is because of technology. So moving into technology, you know, what is the thing that's really driving right now is automation and almost across all industries. And especially we're seeing it in logistics, and we're seeing logistics, in fact, become almost a Christopher Columbus or a barbarian or something of bringing a concept to a field that kind of people think is old fashioned with the trains and the boats and the trucks.
Right.
And is actually they're taking this, automation, and one company specifically is Too Simple here in mm-hmm. Tucson that I think a lot of us have heard about. They've retrofitted their trucks to be able to create a driverless truck. And they actually partnered with Chamberlain recently in the beginning of February, drove a driverless load, in a sense, to their port in Nogales where they do their exporting from.
So it's an incredibly sophisticated industry now
yes.
that seems to have extremely diverse career opportunities.
Absolutely. And that's changing very quickly. And it is, I believe it's going to elevate the industry, you know, and it's, it scares a lot of drivers that, or people that might think they want to be a driver when they grow up, that's not going to exist anymore. Well, let me start by saying right now, drivers are in extreme demand. We desperately need drivers, and those drivers' positions aren't necessarily going to go away in the next 10, 20 years. They're just going to shift to become maybe driver's assistants. Or engineers that sit in the trucks, because they still do need a physical, personal aspect to making sure that these trucks are doing what they need to be doing.
Yeah, what I've heard is that there's going to be a skill shift.
Exactly.
Right? So, you know, it's not going to be a person behind a wheel. They're going to have to learn about the technology. Some are going to have to learn how to further develop the technology. They're going to have to learn how to utilize the technology. So it's really a skill shift. I mean, what kind of cracks me up sometimes about these discussions about automation, I heard a great story the other day about how in, I think it was 16th century England, that they wanted to do away with the seamstress, right? Because there was some automation in the seamstress industry,
right.
And so of course the seamstresses at the time were saying, no, you can't take those jobs. And actually, Queen Elizabeth prohibited the automatic sewing machine or whatever it was in that day from coming to England, so that they could keep the seamstress jobs. Well, guess what? The automatic sewing machine won out. But a lot of those jobs have shifted. I mean, I think, you know, we're always innovating. And so we're always going to find something for someone to do. It's just what that something is very different from what it was 100 years ago. And I think you're seeing that not only, obviously, in the transportation and logistics industry, you're seeing a lot of that automation in mining, which is somewhat obviously related. But you're seeing some of that shift in other industries, and we will certainly learn how to cope with that.
Absolutely. You know, and that brings you back to education. You know, there's a lot of stress on the whole technical engineering kind of future that we're looking at. I hope my daughter grows up to be an engineer, but I know my son isn't going to be interested in that. So he's probably going to be more in the, you know, let's say liberal arts side of things or business side of things. So we still need to make sure that we stay balanced with having, you know, kind of the philosophical people in place to make sure that technology doesn't kind of get away from us, shall we say. So all of that is still necessary for, you know, in the industry that we're talking about today, too.
By the way, I appreciate your maybe intended pun earlier saying that technology is driving industry.
I didn't notice that one.
That was good.
So, Mike, what are you seeing in the future of logistics?
I'd say the thing that comes to the forefront for me is the same thing that was mentioned, which is Too Simple. And we've had multiple discussions with Too Simple and talking about what they're doing. For us, we really see that as being huge. And the fact that Arizona as a state is really welcoming that and embracing autonomous vehicles, especially when it comes to logistics. I think on top of Too Simple, I've heard of other groups that are looking around the state for expanding that. And I think what we're seeing is much like I think the sewing machines, the sewing machines came in to fill a need, to address a problem. One of the problems right now is that there is a need for more drivers. There really needs to be more trucks. There's an opportunity for more trucks to be going in and out of Southern Arizona. And for a variety of reasons, the efficiencies of that have gone down. Part of that is the need for drivers. The other thing is that some of the newer safety regulations when it comes to truck traffic, where the effective time that drivers are being able to drive has been lessened to the point where, supply and demand, freight rates go up. So, you know, it's our hope that companies like Too Simple and others that can come in, address those things. We have our ways of addressing that from a intermodal standpoint, and that's one of the things we're looking to expand on. But our hope is that we can really have all those different opportunities for addressing that problem in Arizona, in Southern Arizona, and make that happen, like with the connection with Nogales and what Too Simple is doing.
And actually, you know, Mike, going back to that too, and expanding it further, and talking about our border is, I think the next step is, you know, how does customs on both the Mexico side and the U.S. side get their head around a truck like Too Simple,
right,
eventually,
right,
moving across the border? And a lot of that process will become automated in the future. And so applying that technology, sometimes the, you know, government is kind of the last one to get their head around it. But that's one thing that Saleo hopes to do soon. We hope to have an event in Nogales to bring in, you know, the local commodity exchange people and trade people to really start talking about what that looks like soon.
Let's talk more about Saleo.
Sure.
So how do you help companies in that industry?
So Saleo is, we're basically a board of volunteers, and we ask a lot of our network to constantly be volunteering for us as well, in using their strengths to share in exchange. So essentially we do We do four networking events a year where we're either educating or bringing people together to share best practices, or even raising funds in order for scholarships so that more people can study in this field. We do this through different events. We've done some surveys in the past. We sit on the Pima County Workforce Council. We go to chamber events and make sure that, you know, we're just doing our best to engage in the logistics community, meet new companies, see how they can apply to, you know, fit into the logistics in the region, basically. Pima County Community College, we sit on the advisory committee there for their program. Recently, we just joined an advisory group at Fred Acosta Job Corps, which is a great program in town. And they actually took their retail certificate program and relabeled it logistics certificate. And so it's basically a supply chain certificate program, because the truth is retail box stores are going away. They can't keep training for jobs that won't be there in the future. So they've totally shifted it, and we've helped guide them. They've purchased a forklift. They're going to start doing forklift certification training, as well as taking all that kind of inventory and customer mindset and applying it to the field of logistics.
Is there, so Soleo is just for Southern Arizona. Do you work with similar organizations across the state, country?
You know, we're starting to engage a little bit more with the Arizona Tech Council, especially as technology is such a hot topic in our field, in our industry right now. But honestly, not necessarily countrywide. Of course, the consulate in Mexico is always kind of on our radar here in Tucson, representing more of the region.
And I'd maybe add in also another thing that we've been longtime supporters of Soleo since they got started in the early 2000s. And we've always appreciated all the things that they do to help raise all the boats in the region when it comes to logistics. The one thing that I think is also really important is the networking that was mentioned earlier. One of the benefits I think we all see in Southern Arizona and the Tucson region is the fact that it's really a small town of a million people. And, you know, it's not a lot of degrees of separation. And that networking for new people coming into the region, filling those logistics jobs for these new companies coming in with the tech, the fact that there is this place where you can go and there's regular events where they can go and network with other logistics professionals is critical, because it keeps that same thing where, well, we don't handle that, but given that we're all in this to raise the tide, we know someone who with that networking ability, those connections are made.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've been asked over the years to maybe start like a job board, and where companies can list jobs. And at the end of the day, what we realize, we're as limited by the number of hours we can put in towards this, but we can tell those people that are looking for jobs who to maybe contact directly instead. And a lot of times that's a lot more effective to utilize our tap on that network when we identify a skill that we can grab.
Well, and that's, I think, where we can really play a role in that regard. Amber talked earlier about the hiring event that we held last fall. Very successful, obviously, matching veterans with folks in the aerospace and defense industry. On April 23rd, we're going to hold another hiring event, but we're expanding it beyond aerospace and defense. We actually want to include some transportation logistics and some construction jobs as a part of that. We'll also include more than just veterans. So I think there's a way that we can help sort of augment the work that you're trying to do to connect some of these job seekers with these jobs. Because as you've mentioned, it's not just drivers. There is a great driver need. I mean, I remember hearing those stories about what they were offering $90,000 to drivers to haul the oil out of North Dakota. I think there's just a great need countrywide. Nationwide, but it's certainly a need here. But it's not just drivers; it's also some of these other positions that you talked about, Emily, that are in great need as well.
Well, what I was even wondering is, would any company that ships out their product be considered a logistics company?
I think you become a logistics company when you're solely dedicated to that process, whether it's shipping or receiving or importing or exporting or driving, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So again, going back to the example I used as the military, some other huge every large company in town has a component of logistics.
That's what I was thinking for aerospace and defense, that supply chain.
You know, Sally Crum was the transportation manager at Raytheon, and she still sits on our board actively. So she, you know, worked for Raytheon, worked for Hughes, that you don't really think of them. You're their aerospace and defense. That's their industry. They're a manufacturer.
Right.
But a huge portion of their employees are committed to making sure the parts are there on time for their manufacturing floor.
Right.
And that, you know, so we do trickle into supply chain management and production manufacturing quite a bit. Even hospital, Banner Health has a procurement division, you know, making sure all the supplies are there. They aren't necessarily doing the transport of those supplies, but they're managing that process to make sure that things are getting, you know, to their surgery rooms when they need to be there, for example.
Which once goes into the skill set necessary.
Exactly, and that I believe that skill set can be transferable outside of, you know, across industries,
sure.
I guess.
So then, I just lost my train of thought on thinking about that. So we've talked about trucks and we've talked about trains. What about airplanes? And how does that kind of feed into logistics?
I'm thinking John Candy. I'm thinking
planes,
Steve Martin.
Trains.
Yes.
I guess I can speak to that a little bit. I know barely enough to be dangerous on that, but I was fortunate enough, Lisa Lavallo with Cross Communication asked me last year if I would participate in the committee that's looking at Tucson International Airport, and not only looking at the freight side of what's going on there, but also looking at how we can really develop TIA into being a more solid part of the freight and logistics in Southern Arizona. And I'm really excited to see that effort underway. We've already had a couple of meetings, and it's really neat to see that really all the different sectors, whether you're talking about the technology sensor sector or the job force, the job creation sector, and then the airport, and getting all those pieces together, I think for us, from an economic development standpoint side of things, it just positions us really well when site selectors come to town, when logistics companies come into town and are looking for a site, that you have a way to check those boxes off. So if they come in and say, do you have rail or intermodal? Do you have interstates? Do you have a workforce? Do you have air freight? And it's almost like shots on goal in soccer. You know, so the more chances you have, you know, more things that you check off that you have in place when you get those shots on the goal, the more of a chance that you're actually going to be able to score.
So that plays into the advantages we have as a region. So the port has the foreign trade zone.
Yes.
What does that mean, and how does it make us competitive?
So the foreign trade zone is, in the most simplistic way, it treats an area that's activated foreign trade zone is outside the United States as far as customs is concerned. Now, that's not just to say that, okay, well, you put it in there, it's a foreign trade zone, and you don't have to worry about it. What you're really doing in that case as an operator in a foreign trade zone is you're taking on some of the duties that customs would normally take care of. So there's paperwork, there's security, there's all sorts of reporting requirements that are done. So that there's a comfort level on customs part that some of the administrative tasks, the security tasks that they'd normally be doing, that company is set up to do those. Now, the benefits of that is that, number one, there are tax saving property and real estate tax savings that can be had there. But the larger part is it's tariff benefits. And that comes in a couple different ways. You can have goods that come in, if they come in bond into a foreign trade zone. Once again, it's not in the United States from a customs standpoint. There's no tariffs paid at that point. If it leaves that foreign trade zone in bond and goes to another foreign trade zone or out of the country, there's no tariffs paid at that point. So in a hypothetical situation, using a company that uses an anchor here in Southern Arizona and one at Sonora, if you had components that were coming in from overseas that came in the foreign trade zone, they went down into Mexico to get assembled, and then back to Southern Arizona, and then out, you know, for global distribution, there's a huge potential savings there from a tariff standpoint where you don't have those tariffs being applied. The other thing is from a capital management or capital management strategy, if you outline those tariffs closer to when you're to market, it just from the bean counter sense, it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. And then there's even tariff reductions where if you have multiple components that go into the same finished product, they're at different tariff rates. There's a way to pick and choose which tariffs you're actually doing on the finished product. So a lot of benefits. It's one of the things that we're always trying to get better about, because the groups we've talked to in the past about foreign trade zone, there's this perception that you have to be of a certain level of sophistication as a company in order to benefit from from the foreign trade zone. And one of the things we try to really communicate or educate about is, you know, it's something that's it's not rocket science. There are things that you have to learn how to do, but at the end of the day, there's a huge payout if you have that right business model.
And then are you able to train them on that? I mean, if they needed to learn more about the ins and outs of that, is that an attorney or?
There's attorneys throughout the country that specialize in that. There's resources that even Sun Corridor here in town have. They have the administrator for the foreign trade zone for Pima County. There's a number of resources. And what we try to do is not be, we operate a foreign trade zone out there. So we do have some experience as to the paperwork requirements, the security requirements. We go through a security check and back on an annual basis. But so we can provide resources, and at whatever point it surpasses what we've had direct experiences with, there's resources both regionally and nationally that we can direct them to.
So you mentioned Sun Corridor Inc. What is their, how active do you work with the Sun Corridor?
I think the interaction we have with them outside of the Foreign Trade Zone Administration is that they are the Economic Development Office, for Southern Arizona. They are the ones that Arizona Commerce Authority, ACA, when they send requirements down for these companies like Amazon, when Amazon's coming to town or when Home Goods came to town, typically, or in a lot of cases, ACA will get those requirements. Those requirements will come down through some corridor and get sent out to whether it be landowners, brokers, anybody involved in the real estate side of things, or sometimes even people from Saleo's standpoint or from other who are in logistics, they help to put that kit together and get that information back to the prospective client or customer company.
So it was, 20 million square feet? What was my statistic earlier? As far as what is over at the port?
Oh, 2 million square feet.
2 million square feet.
220. Sure. Yeah, let's go with 20.
Well, it goes with my question, though. Are you looking to expand the footprint of the port?
Yes. And actually, earlier when we were talking about when you had the question about specialized buildings, we actually have a new building coming online that's 230,000 square feet that will be a cross-dock building from truck to rail and rail to truck, boxcar type traffic. And so that will bring us up to about 2.3 million square feet. And we have plans for another building past that. Also looking at a potential connection to rail, but also we have some things in the works as far as some dedicated just logistics facilities where we can have some more available inventory for companies that come in. Aside from that, what we're always looking to do is put together a situation where when companies come to town, they can actually execute quickly here. There's some companies that they are very methodical and they go through a certain process to find their site and go through their due diligence. There's certain companies like Amazon, it was a prime example where they needed to move quickly, and a lot of companies do. And one of the things that we're set up as at the Port of Tucson is we are a shovel-ready site for Southern Arizona. We're the only one in Pima County and the city of Tucson that's set up as a shovel-ready site, which means you get expedited permits, you get expedited review, and a lot of that comes from the fact that we did all the initial studies from the development standpoint that you do in order to get a development plan put together. So that's one of the steps that we've taken along the way, and we've seen the successes in that. But what we're hoping to do is expand on that so that of that 2.2 to 2.3 million square feet, that if someone comes to us and says, we need to open up a 500,000 square foot distribution site, how quickly can you put up a building? How quickly can we move? We want, just like the other example of being able to check off the check marks when the site selectors come to town, we want to be able to say no problem and say, you can check that off, you can move quickly in Southern Arizona.
One of the things that Emily said that stood out is logistics in my mind, planes, trains, automobiles, but she did reference buildings, facilities as being such an important part. So at the port, it's a matter of having facilities to be able to switch from one you know, logistics to another, you know, going from train to truck, right? Or you can also just house your entire facility right there as well, the different components to it.
Correct. So, and one of the things I think I touched on earlier is that whether it be at the Port of Tucson or just anywhere here in the region, the intermodal transportation, which I don't think I mentioned earlier, we're not only domestic intermodal, but international intermodal. So we provide access and provide lanes to and from all Pacific Rim countries. We have shipments that are going to China on a daily basis. Actually have some that go to Dubai. And so that intermodal transport, the lines get blurred a little bit for people because they look at intermodal and they go, that's rail transportation, you need rail right to a building, you need this this type of facility. But at the end of the day, those intermodal containers are used by MTD Southwest, by Chamberlain, by a lot of other companies where you don't need a specialized building. You can benefit from rail transportation, but it's the same thing as having a regular truck, bring a container to or a dry van to your facility. You load it up, you seal it, and then it goes. It just so happens that they're using the A to B example from earlier. It's almost an A to B to C, where that B is that container goes on a train and goes towards its final destination, but you have the A leg that takes it to an intermodal facility and the C leg that takes it to the final destination. And so one of the things we're also trying to do is actually expand the understanding of that and what that brings, because from a marketing standpoint, from an economic development standpoint, I wear two hats. One is I'd love to put buildings all through Century Park or through the Port of Tucson and build out our available square footage. At the same time, the Port of Tucson isn't strictly for what we have as far as industrial properties. It's more regional, including down in Mexico. We have containers that are coming in. They're domestic containers that go down into Mexico and go back and forth on those lanes. So
then what is your relationship with Union Pacific? I mean, I assume it's very close and unique.
We do have a very, very good working relationship with Union Pacific. And we started putting rail down out at the park in 2001, and slowly but surely just worked toward building that relationship with them. Our actual role for Union Pacific is we are a contractor to them. We have 10 miles of our own infrastructure, our own locomotives, which I mentioned earlier. But what we do is we provide that last mile service to Union Pacific, both for the intermodal and for anything that's not intermodal, like the boxcars. So from the intermodal standpoint, we provide the service of taking containers off of a train, putting them on chassis, and making them available to truck drivers, and vice versa. When containers come back in, take them off the chassis, put them on the train. And in a lot of cases, we won't know what's going through those containers. It's just, we're just lifting boxes from a chassis to a truck or vice versa. The other part of that is we have the boxcars like the beer I mentioned and some of the other companies that do transload, where we really provide provide the opportunity to them to access those rail cars. And because we have our own locomotives, our relationship with Union Pacific works very well because we're a one work event site for Union Pacific. So every night, six nights a week, they bring out a block of cars to us, rail cars to us, including intermodal and the box cars and other types. They drop those off and pick up anything from the day before. With our equipment, with our locomotives, we do all the intra-plant switching, which allows them to service not only the customers that are there, but onboard customers very quickly, within the period of a week or less. Whereas normally, if another location wanted to get up and go on with rail service, they wouldn't be able to do that. And over the years, we've been able to perform to the expectations, and I believe even exceed for Union Pacific, and that's really helped to build the great relationship we have with them.
So shifting gears a little, see if you like that, shifting gears a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I got to get into the pun game as well. I know you both well enough that I know that you both are in the logistics industry, but you didn't really start in the logistics industry. Obviously, your father had this great vision. He had this land. He built the Port of Tucson. But you were involved in software, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then kind of came back to the industry. Emily, you were at Randstad Staffing. You and I worked a lot together. when I was at Sun Corridor, you sat down with a lot of companies, were really extremely helpful, letting them know the type of talent that we had here, a good glimpse into the types of positions that we had here in the region. But your background was more, you know, related to workforce and human relations.
Right.
So now that you've kind of gotten into the logistics industry, what is it? I mean, you can talk a little bit about, you know, your own personal journey getting into the logistics industry, but how then do we get, you know, kids excited about the opportunities in the logistics industry?
So, you know, you mentioned workforce development and all that. I was basically a recruiter for forklift drivers. I didn't know what a forklift was. I was trying to figure out what's inside all of those big boxes on the side of the highway that, you know, I'm supposed to go sell to or whatever. And so I just really had no idea. And that's why I got involved with Soleil in the first place. I heard about this organization through a customer of mine at the time, Excel, that sat at the Port of Tucson, Excel Logistics. And they said, you and your recruiter should go attend these meetings because you might learn something. And, you know, many years later, I've since left the staffing industry, but I'm still sitting here representing the logistics industry. And how do you get people excited about that, you know, moving forward? I like to think about the fact that the younger generations right now are not getting their driver's licenses. And that's just what's happening. They're wanting to move closer to the cities. They're wanting to not have a car payment, not do their insurance, not have to house it under a roof. And the only way that they're going to be able to survive and maintain that kind of like society that's starting to happen is to pay attention to what is going on around them, and to maybe educate them on like, how did they get that Rubik's cube that they're playing with, you know, walking down the hallway of their apartment building with no car and stepping into an Uber without making facial contact.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of that. I think we have an opportunity here to say, hey, look at the Rubik's cube. Think about where it actually came from. You know, what is it made out of? What are those materials? Where were they sourced? How did that end up, you know, in your hands from your Amazon delivery truck? And if you start having those conversations with younger kids, they start seeing the bigger picture. Logistics is truly a global industry. There's no way around it. So it's just talking about the world, basically.
Before you get into your story, Mike, that just reminded me of my wife is an economics, high school economics teacher. And she has a whole lesson on the invisible hand. And the invisible hand, and she uses a pencil as an example, because the rubber comes from, and I she's going to slap me for not remembering this, but, you know, the rubber comes from
Brazil.
There you go. The lead comes from, well, okay, somewhere.
China.
The wood comes from somewhere. The paint comes from somewhere. So
the little
you
steel.
May be. Yeah, exactly. You may be, you know, using this instrument to write with all the time.
Right.
But but thinking about what goes into all of that, it's that invisible hand that you don't know about that's creating that. I think you're exactly right, Emily. It's really talking about how sort of exciting and interesting what goes into making all of this, and then talking about how it ultimately gets here into the consumer's hand. So, Mike, you want to talk about your journey
so,
a little bit?
How do you go from, was it technology?
Software.
Software.
Well, actually, software is what brought me back to Tucson. I actually grew up in the Tucson area, grew up on the northeast side, and graduated from Sabino, and ended up being very fortunate. I went to the Air Force, and while I was in the Air Force, I learned how to program, and was able to stay working as a programmer, both in the Air Force and in the private sector for a number of years, up until 1999, and I got a call from my dad, who we already had warehouses here in town. I had worked for dad growing up, and he called me up, I think early 1999, and said, hey, do you know anything about this Y2K bug or this year 2000 problem? And it turned out that the computer system that he had, that I had worked with him to find to run our frozen storage warehouse, Tucson Frozen Storage, it was an older system that was affected by that Y2K problem with just two digits for the year instead of four. So he was going out looking for how much, you know, what it would take to actually get the system fixed up. So he thought he was getting the bids on that, and they were coming in a little high because everyone knew they needed to do it, short captive audience. So he called me and said, "Hey, do you think you could write the software?" And having worked with the software and having selected the first place, I always had a thought of putting something together. And that software was a warehouse management system, which would track the inventory, do both receiving, shipping, bills of lading, and then invoicing as well, and a lot of the accounting pieces. I always had this idea, well, you know, I sort of know a little bit about this. I could, I'd always had it in the back of my mind. So when he called, it was sort of interesting because I always had this sort of floating around. So my wife and I and our kids moved back in middle of 1999. And between, I think, August of 99 and December, I ended up writing a new warehouse management system that we still use today to run the warehouse. And so that technology brought me back. At a certain point, there's only so much programming to be done in a warehouse. And so little by little, I transitioned into marketing, economic development, dealing a lot with our commercial real estate or industrial real estate. And really just slowly but surely transitioned into that side of things. But still always keeping an eye on technology. So I've been really excited when some of these companies come in, applying technology towards one of these needs, really addressing it. And the fact that Arizona, like I said before, is so receptive to that. It's neat for me because I can sit there and I think Michael's probably seen me at times when we will have, when he was with Suncorda, where I'll get to talking with companies and I'll start to geek out.
There was lots of geeking out.
Yeah, and so even when the two simple guys came out to take a look at what we were doing, we're sitting there, I'm asking them, well, what kind of cameras and what, so how's the GPS with it? And so at a certain point, I have to sort of ease off. But so that's how I got here and got transitioned from being more of just in the tech side of things, software, hardware, to being more in the logistics field and then also in the economic development field.
And then your brother?
My brother? So I mentioned it earlier, my brother Matt and I, we own and operate along with our dad, the Port of Tucson. We've been really fortunate over the years. My brother handles all of our construction, maintenance, oversight of the Port of Tucson. So when it comes to operations of Port of Tucson, he handles all of that. When it comes to the buildings we put up, he is the one doing that. In fact, the 230,000 square foot that's coming online, he was the one who put that up along with my dad. And so it's been a unique situation and it's been great because we both handle different sectors of what our operation is. I handle our business development, our business office. I handle the marketing and dealing with leases and tenants. And then my brother handles all of the things that have to do with facilities and upkeep of those and how we're going to grow that. And so the fact that we both have strengths in those two areas and we both have a growth mindset, seeing what's going on in Southern Arizona. We've been real fortunate. I'm proud every morning to be able to go into work and work with him and dad and to try to move this forward, move that vision that dad had originally forward.
I want to go back to something we talked about earlier. I like this conversation as it relates to Mexico. I think I'm getting the statistic right, but I think about 7% of the products that come up through Mexico come through Arizona. So that's because we're in fierce competition with Texas and California. So, and this is for either one of you or both of you, what do we need to do as a great location? Tucson's a great location. We're a great sort of front door to that commerce that's coming up through Mexico, through the Port of Tucson. I mean, we have great assets here, but we still could garner more of that in this competitive situation with Texas and California. So what do we need to do to really bolster that industry?
I can tell you a couple of years ago, we did, Soleo as a group wrote a letter to our, I believe it was the Arizona Department of Transportation director, to ask for funding to expand the port of entry in Nogales, and that's specifically the trek lanes. And so, activities like that do result in results. So we have to stay active and continue to ask for, dollars spent in our region to make sure that our commerce is flowing more fluidly over the border. Because the one thing that can happen is that, you know, we could have the border shut down or something, and that means we don't get our Rubik's cubes anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so what, you know, what we can do to make sure that happens is just to make sure that the infrastructure is in place and that the security levels are being taken care of. And a lot of times, you know, I'll give you an example. Chamberlain is a level 3 CTPAT. Thanks, Mike. and that's a security program where they have certain a number of checkpoints as the loads go over the border. They seal the trucks to make sure nothing's tampered with. And we, as I guess a region and as individuals, can make sure that the companies are doing things to keep things secure and not just rely necessarily on federal programs.
And I think I'd actually springboard off of that and just say, really, we have a great story to tell in Southern Arizona. For a number of years, I think that there wasn't really a reputation for Southern Arizona or the Tucson region as a logistics hub. We had a lot of good logistics going on. We had a lot of good companies like Chamberlain, who's been around for a very long time, like NTD, Excel, who would work with Motorola out at the port. But one of the things is that taking the strengths we have here and really going out and talking about it, telling our story, and really raising awareness for the fact that we have all these assets in Southern Arizona. I think that more people knew about that and then knew about some of the other things that were going on, like the joint inspection stations down at the port of entry in Nogales, where they're speeding up the times of trucks coming across the border. I think the more that we could get out there and tell that story and build on that reputation of what we have here, I think that's crucial, because then as people start to think, hey, we really need another place where we're bringing in products from Mexico, and we need to bring them in domestically. You know, where should we do that? Just so it's on people's minds. And I'd say even then, also, as you get more of a buying power in Mexico, I'm looking forward to the day when we're not the channel of products coming up from Mexico into the United States, but where there's things coming through the United States and down into Mexico for consumption. We're really looking forward to that.
Absolutely. But that also begs the question, you talked a lot about what's happening on our site, State Route, I think it's 189 that you were talking about, Emily, where they're adding that new lane to the Mariposa Port of Entry. That's all great. We got these great rail channels coming out to the Port of Tucson. We got all these great highways. I-19 is great. What about the Mexico side? What do they need to do to make sure that we, Arizona, stay competitive?
Yeah, I think the Mexican consulate in town does a pretty good job of getting the word out there and sharing statistics and growth numbers and population sizes. They're, from what I understand, building quite a bit of infrastructure at the border in northern Mexico. There's a lot of focus from the Mexican government of making sure that places like Agua Prieta, which is Douglas, basically, can't forget about them, and Nogales,
mm-hmm.
Mexico, are being built up. With whether it's power grids that they're getting to those communities, but they're planning for population growth. And from what I've seen from my limited understanding of the world, but with that, it begs the question, how do we continue to make sure we're aware of what that looks like? And like Mike said, where is our opportunity shift where we start to support that region as well, you know, because they're growing and there's an economy there that we should be paying attention to. And I don't have the answer for you on how that's going to happen, but, you know, bringing awareness, paying attention, looking at the news and asking for groups like the consulate to continue to share at our meetings what's going on. I know we had an event at the Port of Tucson where they participated and spoke to, you know, 65 logistics professionals. And I think we all learned a lot from them.
Well, I was going to typically close with how can the chamber help the efforts, but I think we just covered that. And really, you know, what I'm hearing is you'd already mentioned the importance of networking and connections. Each of you did, as related to Celio and just the industry in general. And it sounds like the more often that gets out there, the Mexican consulate, us bringing companies in just so that they know that there is an inland port. I know recently I introduced a company to it when I first said that we have a port, he literally laughed and thought I was joking. And I said, no, Right, we do have that, all of a sudden ears perked up. I didn't know that it was, I didn't realize it was even a me because it was so out of context. And so I think that that's what's so exciting, is we have an amazing story to tell, and it's really making sure that everyone hears it, not only right here in our borders, but over them as well. So I want to thank you guys for coming to today, this afternoon, to talk about the importance of our logistics hub that we have right here. And so thank you again to Mike Levine, Port of Tucson.
Thank you.
How can someone learn more about it? What if they are a company interested in locating there?
Well, we have a website that you can go to and get some information, as well as, that has contact information. My email and phone number's on there. We're always looking forward to opportunities to share and evangelize about what we're doing and what Southern Arizona has. And so I think that's probably the best way.
And Emily, Miss Emily Klein, do you want to put in a plug for your company at C&W Consulting?
Sure. We, as you mentioned, do a lot of, we sell software, basically partnering with Intuit, but we also, what I'm learning is that this consulting gig that I do is turns into a lot more. So I also offer recruiting HR services with my background. Right now I'm doing a big bookkeeping integration project with new software for a small company in town. So, anything related to back end business, that's where we can support. And then saleo.org is the website. It's saleo.org. And if you want to contact me directly, info@saleo.org for either my personal business or my volunteer business, that'd be great.
Fantastic. Michael, closing comments?
Well, I would say that we have a great transportation logistics center here in Tucson. We talked about the companies that are here. I really liked the conversation about the workforce. I liked the conversation about the commerce that's obviously coming up through Mexico. The importance of making sure that we have a balance between rail, freight, and air. All those components need to be solid for us to continue to have a strong transportation logistics center here in Tucson. So I think the industry is strong, and it sounds like it's only going to get better.
I was expecting you to have some sort of pun or something there.
Those were all used up, sorry.
Thanks again.
Or historical quote.
Exactly.
Or historical quote. Yeah, I guess I ran out of lanes.
Oh. So thank you again to Emily Klein, Saleo, and Mike Levine, Port of Tucson. It's been a very fascinating conversation. Once again, talking about how Tucson is raising the bar to other communities. I'm Amber Smith of Tucson Metro Chamber, over here at Stewart Title. Thank you so much from Tucson Business Radio.